I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today I'm very happy to be talking with Jerome Tuccilli, author most recently of Gallo Be Thy Name, the inside story of how a secretive but well-connected family rose to dominate the U.S. wine market. We're talking about the Gallo brothers.
The Gallo family, yeah. Right. The Gallo wine family started, Ernest and Julio were the two patriarchs, you might say, of that clan. Their parents started before Prohibition making wine in California. They had an uncle who was known as the Al Capone of the West Coast. His name was Mike Gallo. Ernest denied it up until till he died about a year and a half, 2 years ago. But they were running wine during Prohibition to the Capone mob. I think they were doing a public service, supplying the public with
if nothing else, there were a lot of masses that needed sacramental wine, especially during the Prohibition.
Yeah. Sacramental wine was exempt.
This book, and what I think is fascinating about it, is that it's a social history pegged to a family, an immigrant family, an Italian family with roots elsewhere, and you're talking about a product that has come in the past 50 years or the past 60 years to really kind of define and exemplify a very large shift in American sensibilities, where we went from maybe having jug wine once in a while at a beatnik poetry reading to now we love really rarefied, great-tasting wines from all over the world. This is a story of immigration, of commerce, of technological innovation, of globalization. What was the wine world like before Prohibition in America?
There was a palate for wine in the United States before Prohibition. Back in the 1890s, people dressed up to go out. They put on suits and ties and fedoras, and they drank good wine. We've enjoyed wine in this country since the days of Thomas Jefferson, who tried to grow wine in Virginia and imported wine from Italy and France. Prohibition killed the American palate for wine. It was illegal. So it was easier to make beer and gin in your bathtub, so this became a beer and whiskey drinking country. It took a long time to develop that palate again, and the Gallos, of course, came from Italy, where wine was an everyday thing. Good wine was an everyday affair. They wouldn't even think of consuming a meal without having a glass of wine to go with it. But unfortunately, as they tried to make good wine right after Prohibition ended in 1933, but there was resistance out there. They couldn't sell it. Julio, in particular, was the winemaker. Ernest was the tough guy and the marketing agent, a good salesman. So what did they do to get a niche into the market? They made Thunderbird, all the garbage schlock out there, big gallons of...
And Thunderbird was a sweet, fortified wine?
Yes, it was... The sweet wine tasted more like port, but they put lemon in it to cut back on the sweetness.
So they didn't want to make this wine, but they knew how to serve a market. They also made Ripple, is that right?
Ripple was another one of theirs.
Boone's Farm,
apple wines. They had all kinds of fruit.
By the way, we might have to stop because I'm having flashbacks to my adolescence now.
Yeah, well,
so the Gallo brothers, in a weird way, are like, you know, they're the starter. Family of mm-hmm. of people now who drink good wine, some of which is made by the Gallo family, right?
Some of which is made by the Gallo family today. The problem for the Gallos is that people don't trust the Gallo label. So when they, the youngest generation right now, Gina and Matt Gallo, the grandchildren of Julio, are really making top shelf wines at a low price. But people won't buy it because of the Gallo label. So what they've done to get around that is they've bought up high-end wineries like Louis Martini, Fry Brothers. They've bought good labels from Chile and Argentina and Italy. And you won't see Gallo's name on them. But if you see bottled or distributed in Modesto, California, that's a code name for Gallo. I mean, the Gallos own Modesto, okay. California.
What's the large narrative of the Gallo family saga? What's the Gallo family's tragedy or epic tale?
Well, it's not just a biography. It's also a history, a saga of American social history, and it's also a true crime story. The book actually starts with the murder of Ernest and Julio's parents in Fresno, California. The police covered it up. It went down, you know, father goes crazy, kills his wife, and then shoots himself. The circumstantial evidence has convinced me that it was a mob hit. that they owed money to the wrong people. Some members of the Gallo family have told me that. So there's the true crime element. So from that, and from the ashes of Prohibition, Ernest and Julio come along, they're first-generation Americans, and they have the knowledge of winemaking, which they started. They had a tough time after Prohibition because you had the Great Depression. But they competed with the likes of Mondavi and Sebastiani. These were established dams in California, winemaking. And at some point, 10, 12 years later, they actually outcompeted them. They outcompeted them by making Thunderbird and by making Ripple and later on Boone's Farm and Bartles and James and all the things that Americans wanted to drink, all this glop. And at that point, Julio insisted that let's get into the fine wine field, and they tried and tried and have had a lot of trouble overcoming that stigma of their early years. The new generation, as I mentioned, has had a more success in doing it, but not as great a success in marketing it. There's still a resistance against that. But they've also used the political system to further their ends. They were giving a lot of money to the Clinton campaign, and they got favorable tax treatment. Bob Dole, a Republican, called it the Gallo Tax Amendment. So they started giving a lot of money to Bob Dole. They actually became his number one political campaign contributors. After that, Dole shut his mouth and went along for the ride. They tried to keep Chilean wines and foreign wines out of the United States. They succeeded for a couple of years. But then finally the floodgates opened and all this really good wines at low-cost points started coming in from Australia and elsewhere. And so the Gallos was smart enough to respond by buying and establishing footholds in foreign markets, to the point where they control maybe 30 labels. You don't know what's even Gallo.
So this is, I mean, their family saga is a kind of microcosm or a slice of American life, and not like The Godfather. And as a half of Italian American, I feel like I can make, you know, unsavory Italian references. But I mean, but there's a crime at the beginning of a dynasty, which then you know goes through tough times, becomes entrepreneurial. Not just in a business sense, but also in a political sense. And we get to a point where we are in America where we are all richer, we are all more well-connected, and we are all more discriminating in our tastes for virtually everything.
Right. I look at it as a great American success story. I grew up in the Bronx in a working-class neighborhood. My father was a cab driver. My mother's father owned a bar and a restaurant. And the story of people who've come from even more poverty-stricken backgrounds than that and gone on to achieve, in the Gallo's case, billions, has always been fascinating to me, that people can pull themselves up. The system allows that. We have a lot of complaints about the government and restraints on freedom, and that's all true, but it's still possible, and it always has been, to lift yourself out of the ghettos and go on and achieve great wealth and great fame. I look at Gallo, and I think previous writers have failed to capture him. People love to hate Ernest Gallo. He was a thug. He was a tough guy. But the man was also a genius. And I think a lot of people who love to hate Ernest Gallo missed the genius component there. You don't achieve what he achieved without having a great sense of the marketplace, of being a visionary on where cultural trends are heading, and positioning yourself and outcompeting some major competition along the way. So there was a combination here of thug, tough guy, and also genius. And what I try to do in this book is capture both sides of this man.
Well, I want to thank Jerome Ticilli for talking to Reason TV about his new book, Gallo Be Thy Name, a rich social history of a family business that's right at the that tells a lot about America over the past 100 years. Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you.